How brave are you? Today's episode features Amanda Carrasco, a returning guest to Solo Moms Talk, mother of four, and author. This episode is for you if you're looking for ways to heal from trauma or if you're seeking justice. Amanda's story will empower you to be brave. In this battle of life, it's hard to keep your head above the water. So win this fight. My guest today is Amanda Carrasco. Thanks for coming back and speaking to us on Solo Moms Talk, Amanda. I'm glad to have you.
Thank you. I'm so excited to be here. It is an honor to be back. I will say that. Mm-hmm. And I'm excited. I mean, it's been 4 years, and so lots has changed in that time, and I love that. And I was thinking earlier, I thought, you know, okay, like in 4 years, let's do this again and let's continue to see all the changes. You know, we really shouldn't be the same people 4 years later, right? Like there should be some growth and things, right? So, because I know I can get better every day. I still got room for improvement. So, like, mm-hmm. let's keep going on it. So, yes, I'm really excited to be back here with you. It's really cool.
That's pretty awesome. And yeah, I've seen a lot of growth online with you, and I'm very excited to talk to you and to see what you've been up to since our interview. And because I believe that will give solo moms some encouragement if they're feeling stuck.
Okay. So maybe that's a good place to start is that, you know, I am a single mother of four. Two of those children have now become adults since I was last here. So mm-hmm. I have two adults and still two minors. So we're getting to the end of this season, you know, where you have mm-hmm. dependent children in terms of a legal sense. But I mean, certainly there's a dependence that's lifelong, you know, like I'm 46 and I still need a mom and, you know, that kind of thing. And I'm grateful for my adoptive mom that has taken me in and, you know, at 46 and she's like, yeah, you know, I'll take you.
Yeah. It's good to have someone like that when, you know, the birth mom's not around or, you know.
Yeah. So, and it might be because it's not a healthy situation, or could be geographical things, or it could be, you know, a loss of a parent, right? They passed away. Mm-hmm. So we still kind of need, those areas of our life to be filled. And so, it's great that people can kind of step into those gaps. And I know, like, I'm looking at other people and going, where can I step into the gap for you? And I mean, that's how we build community, right? By stepping into the gaps for each other.
Yes. And it's interesting that you should mention that, because a lot of times we yearn to have children. And I've seen people say they regret not having children because now it's too late. But you can always parent someone, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I know several different, you know, couples that don't have any biological children, but yet they're showing up in other, mm-hmm. you know, people's lives and just kind of loving on them. And we discount that too much, I think. Like, I think that's something that's very, very important. So, you know, however you're pouring into someone's life, just because you're not biologically related doesn't mean that it's not as effective or as helpful, or doesn't really matter because you're not connected by your DNA. Yeah, no, it's not that. True. Those heart connections can sometimes be stronger than the DNA connections.
Yeah, that's very true. And I want to ask you, you mentioned that your children, some of them are adults and two of them are younger. And I started this podcast during when my two youngest were in their teenage years. So the teenage transition to young adult is kind of my sweet spot. Mm-hmm. What has that been like for you, raising teenagers especially?
Yeah, no, it's been great, honestly. I think like the teens and then teens into adulthood have definitely been my favorite stage. I know a lot of people are very scared of those stages because, mm-hmm. I mean, there's a lot of growth and transition that happens for everybody because they're trying to find themselves and their independence while still being dependent, you know, and they're trying to figure out this balance of like, how much freedom do I give while still being in charge, you know, and what does mm-hmm. that look like? The thing for me though was like when my kids were really little, I mean, it was exhausting, you know, like physically and mentally and emotionally, you know, because like you cut their sandwich wrong and they're throwing this massive tantrum or, you know, and it for me being a logical person, it was so frustrating because I just wanted to reason with them, you know, and be like, but it just can't be like this right now. So I found it very, I found it easier as they transitioned to being older and we could talk things through, you know, and be like, okay, like, how are you feeling about that? Now, that being said, that makes me sound like such a great parent. My kids are really great, partly because of me and partly in spite of, you know, like, but so I learned a lot with my first two. I learned a lot with them, you know, and the communication piece being so essential. But yeah, like being able to talk and when I as my kids were getting into their teens, that's actually when I learned about restorative justice. And that was critical for me as a person in my own healing journey from harm that I experienced. But it also was really integral into my parenting because all the principles that I learned about bringing people together, I started practicing with my kids. And so we would have family circles to address conflict. You know, when there was conflict between the kids and each other, when there's conflict between me and the kids, you know, as a family, like we would have just family circles. And then we started using them too, just as like regular check-ins and like, okay, let's have a circle up. And I want to know what's the best part of your day or what's your biggest struggle right now. There's not a conflict, but I want to be connected to you. And so we would use circles in that way. So my, you know, learning on that path and my own personal healing really sort of overlapped and grew me as a parent because I was healing from the things that I had experienced as a kid because, you know, my parents made mistakes. There were people outside of our home that caused harm, and that stays with you. You know, as much as you look at like things your parents did and you don't want to do them, like, oh my gosh, like you're like, I am just like them in so many ways, right? Because it's what you knew, it's what you've been raised with, right? That's what you've been taught. So why would you expect something different? But just because you can see it and go, this is something they did, I don't want to do that. You know, like I don't want to yell at my kids. Like if you've been yelled at, chances are you're probably going to yell at your kids. And it's not like a guarantee, but just, you know, in terms of statistical data, you're more likely to because it's how you're raised, it's what you knew. So even if it's something that you don't want to do, you know it, and that's what's going to come out unless you do the work. And that was the thing, was it was, you know, recognizing the unhealthy things, naming them, and then tearing them down and rebuilding because you got to replace them. And it's like, okay, if I'm not going to yell at my kids when I'm angry, what do I do? You know, like, I don't know how to do this. So, yeah, so it's learning all those new things.
I think the key is to recognizing that moment when you're being your mother kind of thing, and catching yourself, and then, rewinding that and being you. I think that's the key, right?
I think an important thing too that was not taught to my generation, and certainly not in the conservative Christian circles that I grew up in, I taught my kids I can be wrong. I will need to apologize to you and sometimes, and I want you to call me out on my stuff. I'm not always going to like it. I may not even always like respond well to it in the moment, you know, when you're calling me out, because nobody really likes to be called out, but I need it because I'm not going to grow and learn if you guys don't have the freedom to call me out on it. So, and we weren't, I wasn't raised that way. You know, you respected your elders. You were seen and not heard because you're a child. Like you shouldn't have a voice. You don't have a right to a voice. And that was one thing that I knew right from the get-go, I did not want for my kids. You know, I needed them to know that their voice mattered, but it means I needed to listen. And especially when I didn't want to. You know, like, and my daughter has been the best at that. I will say, like, my oldest daughter, and it's, we've really come into a groove. Like, I'm so excited because I didn't have a healthy relationship with my biological mom. So I didn't know, like, how to parent my daughter. You know, like, it was really hard. And she's like me in so many ways. Also better. She leveled up. It's great. But she's also like me, and so she was not afraid, you know, in ways like she was brave, and she would call me out, and I mean, I didn't like it, you know. I mean, she was right most of the time, but I had to like sit with it, and kind of go, okay, you know, is she right about this? And what am I doing wrong here? And what do I need to change? Right. I found honestly that with my kids, the things that needed to change the most in terms of their behavior was me. Mm-hmm. I was the biggest force in terms of that guidance and whatnot. So a lot of the parenting classes and things that I went to and learned from, it was all about me changing my ways. We all want to go and be like, fix my kid. You know, they're disrespectful. They're doing this. They're doing that. They're breaking rules. They're, you know, they don't talk to me. They whatever. They're isolated, you know, and the very best educational pieces that I found really addressed me. They didn't even address my kid. Mm-hmm. It was all about me and what I was doing and how I could adapt and change to meet them where they were at. And if I could do that, if I could meet them where they were at, that's when things started to change and our relationships mm-hmm. would improve. You know, the kids would make better decisions. Like we all got better together. But when I sit in this place of overlording and judgment and be like, I'm right, I know what I'm doing, you're not doing things right, like it just breaks down. You know, like when we collaborated as a team. Oh, and make no mistake, they always knew I was in charge. You know, like there was no question of authority, but we all sat at the table together. Mom still made the ultimate decision on a lot of things, but you know, it would be like, hey, let's circle up. We need to talk about this. You know, what are we going to do with this situation? What's your input? I valued what they said and they felt like a contributing member and part of the team. Yeah. So I think that those were really helpful. And so I do have a good relationship with my kids. I love them. They're the most important people in the world to me. And we didn't have difficult teen years the way that a lot of people do. There wasn't the rebellion. You know, it was super funny because we'd laugh. Like I really like to dance. And so I would go out with a girlfriend and my daughter's like curled up with a book and she's like, Mom, don't stay out too late. You know? And I was like, this is wrong. This is so wrong. You know, we have this role reversal. It's so weird.
Yeah.
She's a homebody and Hella's like, well, I want to go have fun, you know?
That is great. I hear two things in what you're saying, especially when it relates to our young adults, is I hear respect and I hear humility and I hear third thing, communication. And I think those three words describe what you're talking about. What do you think?
Yeah, no, I totally agree with that. And I think the thing is that as parents, and even when we're in positions of leadership, period, we look at those that we have authority over and we expect those things from them because I have this position of authority.
Right.
But you don't actually deserve them if you're not giving them to the people that you have authority over.
Mm-hmm.
So we miss that. And especially as parents, we feel like we're entitled to certain things because we're the parent. I birthed you. I brought you into this world. You know, like, no, it doesn't work that way because they're people. They're individual people. They have their own ideas and sets of values and, you know, thoughts and beliefs. They are no longer me. You know, they are not in my body. They get to be independent human thinkers. You know, I don't get to tell them what to do. Two of my kids have decided that they wanted to change their names. Like one of them goes by her middle name. And that was a hard transition. Like I gave you that name. What do you mean you don't want to be called that anymore? You know, like it was like, what the heck? So that was a really hard transition. And then it was actually beautiful. My youngest decided, you know, that they were looking at, you know, maybe having a different name, you know, being called by something else. And so we had a conversation about it. And I actually told her that, you know, when I was pregnant with my first child, that I'd had a different name picked out. And my husband at the time, like, absolutely overruled and said, absolutely not, that's not it. And it was funny because she's like, I really like that name. And I was like, me too. So guess what she goes by now? That name.
Awesome.
So that was an easier transition. Yeah, I was like, okay, I'm on board. This was the name I wanted in the first place.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to lie. It did feel kind of like I got my way. Yeah. Let's be honest. But she's embraced it and loves that name. And so it's really great. Like I love that. So
we've talked about parenting. But I want to talk about something that I've been surrounded with and we've been surrounded with in this solo mom space, which is childhood hurt and healing. I'm going to just say that you wrote a book about your journey, and I really want to talk about that. So let's talk about what prompted you to write the book in the first place.
So I did. So the book is called Becoming the Brave One, My Journey to Justice. And it's sectioned into two parts. So the first part is about the journey through the harm. So it's talking about the experiences that I had as a sexual assault survivor and also as a family survivor of homicide. So it goes through, you know, just kind of like what those experiences were, my childhood growing up and those different things. And then part two is sort of a journey through the healing. So there are trigger warnings through the book just to help, you know, caution people because, you know I've experienced things while watching a documentary, reading a book. And so I just wanted people to be aware. I want to be trauma informed in terms of the care, right? It's about care for people. And hey, this might impact you in a certain way. So I want you to be aware of that. We made the book into two parts because I wanted, you know, the most important thing is the healing part, but it's also good to know like where that came from. So people have the option. If you want to skip part one, you can. You don't have to read about all the bad stuff. I mean, there is a lot of contextualization. And like I say, like sometimes it was good for me when I read other people's stories or heard them on a podcast or something to know I wasn't the only one that went through these things. And I described, you know, some of the feelings for me, like how did that leave me feeling in those times? So it can be good to know that you're not alone and read that from someone else. So that part's all there because that part happened. And I think that part was a really important part for me because we can't address harm that is covered over or secret or hidden. It doesn't mean you have to write a book. So let me say that, you know, but it was an important part for me to write it all out and get it out and look at it because that acknowledgement piece of like, oh my God, this all happened to me. You know, like it kind of carried with me almost like a TV show. Like this happened and I could watch it, but I wasn't in it. And so once I got it out onto paper and especially, you know, like my editor was reading it and things like that and talking about it, it put me as the character in the show. It was like, oh, this is not a TV show I've carried. This is literally my life. These are things I've experienced, you know. So that gave me a really good, strong platform to be able to address those things. There had been a lot of ways I'd been trying to work on things, just trying to like work on self-esteem or work on, you know, that kind of stuff. But like when you've experienced trauma, it's a different level. And, you know, because there's societal things that are going to tell you you're not pretty enough, you're not smart enough. And, you know, you can work on those and that's great. And you should, because we definitely live in a society that a lot of times is going to compare you and try to tear you down. So you got to find a way to not wear those labels. But when you've actually experienced trauma, I mean, there's chemical things, like there's psychological things in your brain. Like there's some really important things that happen that have to be addressed. So you have to be able to sort of dive into that in a safe way, you know, to call that stuff out. So that was what part one was for me, was being like the recognition, the validation, these things happened. And so then it was like, okay, well, now we know these things happen. I can acknowledge that they're contributors to why I am where I am. And at the point, you know, there's a point, you know, before I started writing the book was I didn't like who I was. I didn't like the decisions that I was making and I didn't know what to do with it. You know, and at first I started like reading some self-help books and things, you know, and trying to figure out if that could fix me. But again, like it's deeper than that. And I saw that. So I started to look for professional help. And so that then sort of, you know, part two is about the journey and what are the things that I did that helped me, some of the things I did that didn't help, but to be able to come to a place to face my trauma and say, you don't own me anymore. You don't define me anymore. I'm going to define me. I'm going to own my life. I'm going to own my decisions. I can't own what happened to me, but I can own where I go from here. And the fact that I'm going to heal and the fact that I'm not going to allow these things to tell me that I'm not a good person, that I'm not pretty, that I'm not smart, that I don't deserve good things, that I don't deserve love, you know, and respect and appreciation and all those kinds of things. Because I saw the way those were all factoring into my decisions, you know, who I was choosing to partner with, undervaluing myself in terms of career opportunities, life opportunities, leadership opportunities, those types of things. So So that was really important. And I was like, this isn't working for me. So I needed to address that. And so then I published the book because I really believed that I'm not unique in terms of some of the experiences that I've been through. And I know how it helped me to hear other people's journeys and be able to, like I say, like go through and see, you know, oh, they tried, you know, say EMDR therapy, or they tried these techniques or those kinds of things, and having that help me, having victims and help them to know about restorative justice processes. When you're a victim of crime, you know, do you have to go the traditional route? What does that look like? Are there alternatives? So I wanted people to know my story so they can know, hey, here's some options. Here's some things that work for me. Take a look at your life and will they apply? And hopefully they will. Hopefully they're helpful. Like, that's my belief. I'm believing people are going to read the story. And the book launched last Tuesday. So August 26th, it launched, which was obviously a very exciting day. And yeah, the feedback so far has been very good. You know, like I said, like you put it out there and you hope for these things. But yes, I've been getting, you know, messages saying, this has been really helpful. I can see myself in your story, you know. Yeah. And so in October, we're actually going to launch a campaign to try to get the book in every women's prison in Canada and the United States. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I'm very excited about that because I really do believe that it can help. So we're going with it.
Yeah. And I mean, I believe it's an important book. As someone who's examined this role of trauma in being a single mom, and it's so related because of you don't realize it until that moment when you realize it. So I want you to explain that to us. At what point did you tie the two together? Your life as not being who you want to be, being tied to what happened to you.
I think that journey actually did technically start before I had kids. Okay. You know, I started doing some work on me as a person and the woman that I was, but I had experienced a lot. So, I mean, it was going to be a long journey. And at that point I had met someone that I loved and I think, you know, loved me to the best of his capacities. Also, you know, on a healing journey and, you know, then had children together. You know, and then that adds another piece because you're not just a woman, a wife, friend, you're now a mother, which is a huge responsibility, you know? And so working through that piece, and it drove me even harder to heal because I knew that I couldn't give something to my children that I didn't have. Yes. How do I give them confidence if I don't have it? How do I show them to like be brave if I'm not being brave? I have to be the person that I was created and designed to be so that they can see they can be the people they were designed to be. Right. So I had to do that work in order to pass that on to my children.
Yeah. Thank you. What is Amanda grateful for today?
I am grateful for, oh my gosh, like so many things, honestly, so many things. I'm grateful for my kids that have been on this journey with me. There's been a lot of ups and downs. There's been a lot, like a lot, lot. I am a single mom now. So they've been with me through divorce. They've been with me through being brave and failing, you know, and sobbing on my bed, which I part don't want them to see and part want to be human. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. So navigating all of that space, I'm grateful for the opportunities and people that have poured into my life that saw value in me, even when I didn't see it in myself, and encouraged me and pushed me. My friend Bob, he was a huge encourager and said, you know, like, Maddie, you got to write your story. And he was a guide through. He helped me and said, okay, first write it out, get your editor. You know, like he walked me through the whole process to be able to get to where I am now. I wouldn't have a book if it weren't for him. So like, I'm just grateful for the ways people have poured into me and that, you know, is translating and not only into my kids, but you know, incarcerated clients that I work with, the community that I'm involved in, people that are around me that I'm able to connect with and share who I am with them and learning from them. I mean, it's really how we grow is in community, how we get better is working with each other.
Yes, for sure. All right. So I'm going to ask you to, you have a book, which we're going to put the name in the show notes and it's available on Amazon and AmandaCarrasco.com. Yeah. Yes, and But I also want you to let us know, because the book is very, I mean, the book itself can be training and therapy for someone who reads it. But what do you specifically do for your clients, and how can they get in touch with you?
Right. So, I mean, there's a few different things that I do. So, I would say if you are a victim of crime, and it doesn't matter whether you're at the beginning of the process or the end of the process, you can certainly reach out. Restorative justice is an alternative at any stage, and it can look a lot of different ways. So restorative justice is something I'm very passionate about. It's bringing the victim back into the center of justice. And our current system doesn't do that. It's an adversarial system that we have right now and pits each other against each other.
Yeah.
And that doesn't work, you know, because that means there's a winner and a loser. How about if we all win? You know, So I really believe in a theory of justice that does this. We are harmed in community and we will heal in community. And sometimes that healing in community looks like bringing people together who have harmed and been harmed. Sometimes it's just bringing together community members and stakeholders, you know, to try to help the victims and try to hold the person accountable. So I'm currently doing a lot of work in the justice system and, you know, alternatives and working with victims, you know, to try to help them navigate, because restorative justice isn't well known and sometimes even isn't well accepted in the criminal legal process. So victims will need to advocate for their needs. And that's hard. You know, you're dealing with this trauma that you've just been through and you have to advocate for yourself. So I love to come alongside people where they're at in their journey. And like I say, I mean, this could be post-conviction. My personal restorative justice circle that took place with the man that murdered my family was 28 years after they died. You know, we'd long had a conviction. He was in prison and I went to the prison and sat with him. So it can be long after the fact, but it can still be helpful in healing. I had a need to go and see him and address him and talk to him. And so restorative justice offered me that opportunity. There's also ways that victims at the beginning can also work with prosecutors and the defendants. And so we do things like mediation in terms of working on sentencing plans if the defendant is willing to plead guilty. You know, can you imagine, like, as a victim, having your voice be a part of holding this person accountable, how empowering that is versus our current system that just says you're basically a witness. You are at the mercy of the prosecution and what they want. But not a lot of prosecutors understand or even kind of support this method. They're used to the one way. So again, this is where it's really important for victims to be able to advocate for what they need, facilitate these conversations, and work through things this way to bring greater healing to victims. So that's kind of the focus of my work right now. And so anyone who, you know, has an experience like that or wants to have a conversation, has questions, if you want to know more about restorative justice, definitely message me. I'm happy to do that. I'm doing that right now with the book. We've got some book clubs that have picked up the book and, you know, reading through it. And then I'm going and being able to either Zoom in or go in person and talk to them about, you know, things that they've read, share, you know, even further insights. Because, of course, you can only put so much in a book. So there might be questions that people have as they're reading through and be like, well, what did that look like? And, you know, did you ask that or what was this? So I'm happy to answer questions and then talk about, you know, restorative justice in their context and their community. I'm really excited about those opportunities to go and work with people so that they have a better understanding and know that their voice matters. Their voice is important and their needs should be at the forefront of this process.
Okay, cool. Thank you. And we'll put your website also on the show notes as well. And so just to clarify, so if someone, I understand your position where your family was murdered, but if someone, like a woman, say, victim of domestic violence, is it, or, you know, sexual assaulted or stuff like that, those women, people who are involved in that scenario could contact you, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. Okay. So there was, as I say, there was two restorative justice opportunities for me. And one of them was with a family member who sexually assaulted me for a number of years. So it's definitely something that applies to sexual assault. And again, even if you have some friendly prosecutors to restorative justice, they say, okay, but not for sexual assault, you know?
Okay.
But we've found, like, the research and the data shows that it does matter and it can be useful. And this is where there's a lot of risk assessments done. We're not just throwing people into a room together. Again, same thing with domestic violence, right? I mean, there's risk that's involved. So you have to ensure the safety of all participants. That is first and foremost. You can't continue or perpetuate harm. This isn't a platform for someone to just be able to come in and continue to harm and abuse the other person. Right. That's not how this works. But we're seeing, I mean, domestic violence rates, the statistics in terms of people that call the police and the harm that comes after their reporting. And I'm not advocating that people don't report. I'm definitely not advocating that. But I'm going to be honest about the research and what it's showing in terms of further harm happening to women who are calling for help. That's a problem. When and there's some organizations out there that are specifically working with domestic violence victims and using restorative justice. And it's a community-based approach, which is holding the offender accountable through the community, not necessarily through, you know, police and prisons and all that, which really escalates the offender.
Yeah.
You know, this is family members. This is community members that are stakeholders in terms of this couple and what is happening and keeping her safe and creating, you know, safety plans for her. Like if he shows up at your house, here's the list of people that you need to call and we will come. And he knows, you know, like if I show up at your house, these people will come, like that kind of thing, because police don't seem to be a deterrent. Correct. So there's been some really encouraging research that's been going on with cases that they're using restorative justice and domestic violence. So I'm very excited about that because it's bringing justice back where it belongs, which is our hands. Yes. It's easier for us to just kind of hand it off and be like, well, a judge will decide, the cops will take care of it. Of course that's easier, but that's not justice. It's not going to work. We have to be active participants in this. So certainly if there's someone who's been a victim of sexual assault, domestic violence, you know, any kind of harm, this is possible. It's different. It's a different way of thinking. So I know it's hard for some people to kind of comprehend it, but that's what I'm saying. You know, message me, tell me your situation. Let's talk it through. I had one girl that I met with this week and she is wonderful, but she said, you know, the prosecutor told me that, you know, because she was sexually assaulted and her offender sort of pled guilty. He got a peace bond. We have those in Canada. And prosecutor said, oh, he went through restorative justice. You know, he did some kind of therapy sessions and that was it. But I said to her, that's not restorative justice. Him just going to therapy is not restorative justice because you weren't consulted. Your needs didn't matter. That's not restorative justice. So I was able to explain to her that, you know, what she was told wasn't correct. So that was really helpful for her, you know? And then we talked about like, what would this look like going forward? And I was able to connect her with some resources and things. So yeah, I'm happy to have conversations with anyone who has questions or wants to know what this looks like, or, you know, wants to pursue it.
Cool. Thank you. I appreciate that. We could use all the help we can get right now.
Well, and statistically, right? Like, I mean, it's the majority of us, right? Like there's a lot of us out there that have had these experiences and they do have a deep impact on us. And so finding healing in those places is important. We're not finding healing in courtrooms. Mm-hmm. So to have an avenue that provides that for us and gives us a voice, gives us some power back that our offenders stole. You know, they took things that were not theirs to take. And this is us taking them back. Yeah. That's powerful. So when we get that as victims, like as we find healing, man, watch out for us. Like we're going to storm the world. That's the way it's going to be.
Absolutely. And it doesn't only benefit us. It benefits the children we're raising too. So that's
absolutely. Because they're watching. And you can say anything you want to them, but they listen to your actions.
Yeah.
And so if you're able to show them, hey, I want to find healing, whatever that looks like for you. If it's going to therapy, if it's connecting with groups, if it's reading some books, listening to podcasts, allowing your children to speak into your own, you know, weaknesses and failings, whatever that looks like, pursuing restorative justice. And that's why the book is called Becoming the Brave One, because it's really about finding those little ways and places that we need to be brave. it might be confronting the person that harmed you. It might just be getting out of bed, because sometimes getting out of bed takes bravery. So it's whatever that looks like in your life. Yeah, your kids are watching you be brave.
Thank you. I'm going to let you go. But before I do, two things. One, you mentioned in one part of the book about you building connection with an aunt and that person becoming like a mother figure and a grandmother to your children. I believe I read that properly. Can you just talk a little about creating that kind of environment when you don't have anyone? Because a lot of solo moms don't have anyone. And can you encourage us to, in that respect, building connection with others?
I think we know that we need connection, but it's hard to find it. But part of that is because we have to go look, you know, and I know, like, it's hard because, like, I work from home, you know, and so I'm here. And I mean, it used to be, you know, connections around the water cooler, different things. And it's hard, especially like when you're a single mom and you're like, well, how do I go out? I don't have a babysitter. I don't have this or that, you know, like, so finding those ways, though, to put yourself out there in terms of connection. And it might just be other moms going to the park, finding free moms groups, right? Like when I had my kids, when they were little, we really had no money, you know? And so we had to look at what are the free resources and options in our community. And then, like I say, like going to the parks, and it means, again, like being brave and starting a conversation. You're going to meet lots of people that are not your people, but you're going to meet some people, you're going to find some people that are on their own journeys, that, you know, do want to heal. And they might be people in your own family. At one point, we did move geographically, and that put us in a closer context to some family members that are, like, you know, healthy and helpful. So that was a great thing, but you can't always physically move. So, but I really do believe, like, there are healthy people out there, but they're not going to show up on your doorstep. So you do have to find ways to get out. And again, it's work, and you have to do the work to get through, to get the things that you want, to be who you want to be, to get your life to what it looks like. It's not just landing on your door. And that sucks. You know, who wants to do the work? I don't want to do the work. I'm at this point where I'm not there. You know what I mean? Like, but I'm so much closer to where I want to be. And I know, like, it's been worth all the work. All the times, like I said, that I've tried and failed, there's been a ton of failure, a ton. And so there's been lots of heartbreak, lots of tears, but the successes that I have at this point in terms of who I am as a person, successes that I've seen in terms of, you know, going back to school and pursuing my dream of working in the law. I wanted that as a teenager. And I didn't believe that I was good enough for it. I didn't believe I was smart enough. You know, my mom was a single mom. We didn't have money. Like, it just, this isn't going to happen. And I totally let that dream die until I didn't, you know, until I went, actually, this is what I want to do. And so I started pursuing it and continuing to pursue it and finding those opportunities. You know, I got student loans the very first program that I did when I went back to school. And so I made it work, and I'm thankful for, I mean, the Canadian government was really helpful in terms of supporting single parents with student loans and stuff. So there's lots of different opportunities out there. But again, you got to do the work. You got to apply for the scholarships. You got to apply to get into the school. You've got to get up every morning, get the kids ready, do their things, then do your thing. It's exhausting. It's exhausting, but it's absolutely worth it. I wouldn't trade it. Like, I'm so glad that I did that every day to be where I am.
Yeah. And you have to believe in yourself, right? You have to believe you can do it.
But, and that's what I say, like, this journey started so long ago with just realizing I didn't like who I was. And as long as I'm having those beliefs, nothing else is going to change. I'm not going to get up and pursue going to school and changing my, you know, whole vocation and career to go after what I was dreaming if I didn't think I deserved it, if I didn't think I was worth it. Yeah. You know, it's just like, well, why? Why bother? Yeah. So it's this whole, all these pieces that kind of interlock like little Legos that build this giant tower. And it feels like if you're looking at a graph, it feels like to me looking backwards that, you know, the success of who I am as a person kind of started off very plane, you know, like very straight. And then you reach a point where it starts to incline and it goes up and up and up and up and up and up, and, you know, and then it goes up exponentially once you reach a certain point. And I was like, oh my gosh, it feels like liftoff, you know, like you're going along and along and you feel like you're not getting anywhere. You feel like there's setbacks because there will be, but you keep pushing and eventually you're going to start getting these, you know, little liftoffs until the big liftoffs. And then it just keeps going. And, and when I'm who I want to be too, I'm attracting those people around me. You know what I mean? Like I don't know if you know, like you've been around people that are, that are Eeyore and it's like, oh, I'm sad for you, but I really don't want to hang out with you, you know, because you talk all the time about how horrible your life is and you're not even willing to do anything to change it. Like, it's like, you've accepted that. I don't want that. So you got to be around people, like I say, that are continuing to drive, and you'll continue to meet people as you do that, meet people in your classes, you know, that you decide to go back to school, or meet people in the new job or the mom's group you decide to join. And it, you encourage each other. It's all about community. Oh my gosh. All about community.
I'm so happy that I connected with you again, because man, just full of it in a good way.
I was going to say, I'm full of some, that's for sure.
Well, you have to be full of something. And in this respect, it's awesome. It's just pure awesomeness. And I really appreciate you, Amanda, for coming and just sharing your time with us. And please check out Amanda's book. Tell us the title again.
Yeah, Becoming the Brave One, My Journey to Justice.
Yes. And follow Amanda on Instagram. You're on Instagram, Amanda.
I am. Yeah. Amanda, the Brave One.
Yes. Okay. All right. So I appreciate you coming and just, you know, hanging out with us on Solo Moms Talk. Any parting shots?
No, just look at whatever it takes to be brave for you today. You know, whatever that looks like, putting your shoes on, spending extra time with your kid, you know, self-care, signing up for school, whatever that looks like for you. Bravery is a different journey for all of us, but it's important to be brave.
Yes. Thank you, Amanda. I appreciate you.
Well, thanks for having me back. I can't wait again in 4 years to come back and we'll be talking about all the things.
For sure. You know, it's really insane, because the amount of time I thought to myself, you know, nobody wants to hear this anymore. I'm just not going to do this anymore. And then I sit down with someone like you, and I'm thinking, why wouldn't I? Why wouldn't I do this? You know? So I'm so happy. And yes, 4 years more.
Oh, that's great. Thanks for continuing to be here, continuing to show up. Be brave, even in those self-doubt moments, right?
Yes.
Like we all have those. We all have those. What am I doing? What am I doing? Yeah.
Appreciate you.
Well, thank you.